Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening. Induction.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Friday edition of The Drive, a wet Friday afternoon, as we've gotten some rain here over the past few hours. It looks like we may get a little more of it through the weekend. But, you know, settle back in and join us. We'd love for you to join us on the show, as we've got a full room today. Dan back from Dallas. You left Dallas still standing?
That's right. I played a couple days at Texas Hold'em, and now we're back after I busted out in Dallas. No, it's gonna be back. Media Days was a blast. You know, great to see everybody. It really is sort of the it feels like we're a lot closer to the start of football season than we were a week or two ago. And I know we are closer before Tex calls in and points out that we are, in fact, closer to the start of football.
Less than 2 weeks away from the start of practice now.
Right. Before I get, yeah, but it does feel like sort of an unofficial start of the college football season, or at least an unofficial end of the off season. Yeah. With what we got last week. And we got the projections. We got the projected order of finish and the preseason conference teams.
Right. And it was about what we had said, somewhere around 10, and it's exactly where Auburn was. Auburn picked 10th today by it was announced that the media voted Auburn number 10 in the preseason SEC rankings.
And I think, the top four, not really a surprise. Georgia, no. Texas, Bama, Ole Miss. I think most people have those. I'd say if you have someone else in your top four in the preseason right now, it's not, I mean, you can look, if you think Missouri or LSU or Oklahoma or Tennessee or like, if you're really bullish on one of these teams and you think they belong in the top four, it's justifiable. But I would say most people, and I would think that I'm lumping you in here, Bill, like most people perceive the top four of the conference going in some order, Georgia, Texas, Bama, Ole Miss.
Well, I perceive Georgia, Texas, and Alabama as the top three, and probably Ole Miss four. Would not be surprised at all if LSU bumped Ole Miss for the fourth spot.
How surprised would you be if Oklahoma challenged for a spot in that
stunned.
Top four?
I mean, they're stunned. I want to see how their offensive line plays with a new offensive line up there. But
Tell me Oklahoma's record after the Tennessee, Auburn, and Texas games,
yes,
and I'll tell you what kind of season they're going to have. Because if they're 0-3, world of hurt. World of hurt early because they're
2-1.
If they're 2-1, you're thinking
they're going to finish pretty high. SEC.
If they're 2-1 with because that's one of those three in Norman. Granted, two of them are home games because one of them's the Red River rivalry. It's their year to host the game. Although and people do stress, it's 50-50 in the stadium. Like for the folks who point out, like, well, it's not really fair for Oklahoma to host Texas in Dallas in the Red River rivalry, and for that to be one of Oklahoma's home games, and for that to be one of Texas's conference road games. Folks will point out it is far more neutral in the stadium, but it's much more. I mean, just the travel alone makes it more of a road game, I think, for Oklahoma.
I still, and I'm not as familiar. I haven't been to one of those matchups. I just feel like it would have to feel for Oklahoma sort of the way Legion Field used to for Auburn.
I would think
it's more their home turf than it can ever be Oklahoma's.
Would you relate it to Florida and Jacksonville? Maybe is that sort of thing? Like I think that's maybe similar. And there was I'll tell you or A&M in Dallas when they play Arkansas every year, which is ending. This is the final year of that at AT&T, and you got the sense Arkansas people are ready to start hosting Texas A&M in Fayetteville.
Kidding.
Like that's one where they I think Pittman pointed out Arkansas's 1-9 in the last 10 against A&M, and it's like that's a series you probably want to move.
It's not all Dallas's fault.
It's not all Dallas's fault. Some of that's on Bielema and Chad Morris and the former coaches at Arkansas in there. But no, I can understand where Sam Pittman's saying it's probably the best thing for Arkansas football to get that one out of Dallas. All due respect to Jerry, get that one out of Arlington and move it to Fayetteville or Little Rock, which they point out like they're down. They're happy to play a conference game.
If A&M wants to host in Dallas, they'll be glad to host in Little Rock.
I'm told that a good Arkansas team in Little Rock is a really tough drive. I've never been to that stadium. I've been told that used to be
that's when Arkansas would play at night.
Yes.
Remember that, Don? When Arkansas had night games, they were generally in Little Rock.
And it's a different crowd. You have people who don't usually go to Arkansas games. That's more of a Little Rock area fan base rather than something for the folks in Fayetteville. I got the sense from Pittman he'd love to play at least one, and granted, there's pressure in Fayetteville to keep those games there too.
Yeah.
But they would love to play a big conference game in Little Rock for those fans. Mm-hmm. I think that Eli would be okay playing a big conference game in the Dome in St. Louis after the way they played last year against Memphis in the former Rams Stadium. I think there's talk that Eli, as much as they like Columbia, if they got the right, I mean, they have a lot of St. Louis players on the roster who really enjoyed getting to play that game. I think they want to recruit that area really strongly. I think that it makes some sense they've talked about playing games in Arrowhead.
Only problem with doing that is you don't get to host recruits.
You don't. No, that's
huge.
That can be can be a big problem.
It's a nice gesture for the fans and it's a nice field trip for the program, but you're right, you're sacrificing not just the local, the considerations to the local economy when you play a home game versus taking that home game out of town, but also like you said the recruiting benefits of something like that. But have you been to War Memorial or Little Rock
Never. Always at Fayetteville. Yep. I never really was involved in too many of those games the Ole Miss Mississippi State used to be in Jackson. But when I was there, it was home and home. Alabama, Auburn, home and home. So, I can't think of any time that I've played a team that wasn't at their home stadium. I don't think so.
All right, we're just underway here on the Friday Drive. Dan is back. Don is with us once again. Bill here and Drew at the controls. Just getting underway here on the Friday Drive. Yes, we'll run down the entire or predicted order of finish and the preseason media days all-conference teams. Auburn with four representatives on the preseason all-conference team. We'll get into all that and much more. Love for you to join in, though. You can call us on the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390. I forgot to say, it's sponsored by Skybar.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm rusty from the last couple of days out of the studio. But you can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center.
As Dan said, the predicted order of finish, you heard the top four. I know who number 10 is. Georgia, a pretty solid number one. They had 165 first place votes. Texas was second with 27. Alabama had 12 first place votes, and Ole Miss 4. Now, I said this last year, and Vandy was next with 2.
The pranksters.
The two people who voted for Vandy should never allowed to vote again. They should never be allowed to vote again.
Let's see what happens.
Oh, yeah, sure. So Vandy is picked dead last in the conference, but two brilliant guys picked them to win the SEC. We'll see.
I would be okay, and I know members of the media probably would just stop voting if this happened because they wouldn't want to be hassled online. And I think if the ballots were public, I have no problem, sharing that I had. I'll tell you what. I went should I – the team I pick first, is that my SEC champion, or can I have the team pick finishing second beating the first place team? Is that allowed, or should I have picked my SEC champion to finish first?
Your SEC champion should be the team you think is going to,
I went Georgia-Bama because I could see Georgia finishing with a better regular season record than Bama. But I also don't like picking against Bama in big games because I've seen it too many times. And so I feel like if there was a Georgia-Bama SEC championship game, maybe Alabama wins again, just like they did last year, even though Georgia finished with a better record. I went Georgia-Bama as my SEC championship game, but I picked Bama as my SEC champion this year.
Okay.
Which, so by the way,
you're one of 12. There were only 12 people. Yeah, only 12 people at all of Media Days picked Alabama, and Dan was one of those 12.
Going out on a limb. I'm going out on a limb and thinking Alabama might win the SEC.
Yeah, well, when only 12 of, what is it, 192, 204, 208, 10, 12, 213 votes cast, only 12 picked Alabama.
And how many, what were the numbers for Georgia and Texas?
165 for Georgia, 27 for Texas, 12 for Alabama, 4 for Ole Miss, 2 for Vandy and LSU, and 1 for South Carolina.
Georgia probably needs to go 2-1 on the road against Bama, Texas, and Ole Miss to get to the SEC. I don't think a 6-2 SEC. I don't think a 6-2 team is going to be in the SEC championship game.
Probably not.
I don't think so with this year's schedule. So if Georgia loses two of the road games in Alabama, Texas, and Ole Miss, if they lose two of those, I don't think they're making the SEC championship game.
I think most people are figuring they're not going to lose two.
I don't think people think they're going to lose two of those games. Mm-hmm. But those are two. I mean, Bama and Texas are a pair of brutal draws for a team that hasn't lost a regular season game.
When Georgia has to go on the road to the next three teams picked behind them,
right?
That's a tough. That is, Georgia. That's a little payback for the last couple of decades of being in the SEC.
If Georgia's 8-0 this year with this schedule,
yeah,
it would be very, very impressive. And you say that thinking, well, it's impressive to go 8-0. Ever in the SEC, you win all eight of your conference games. It's always impressive. Georgia's done it the last couple of years. I think it would be more impressive this year.
I agree. Schedule is much tougher.
I mean,
but Georgia had as large a lead over Texas, a nearly 300 point lead over Texas, and there's only 250 points between Texas, Alabama, and Ole Miss. So Georgia is by the media the solid favorite, and then really tight between Texas, Alabama, and Ole Miss. That tells me a lot of people, just because Texas had the second most first place votes doesn't mean they had as many second and third place votes from other people as well.
I think a pick of Texas, Bama is totally legit because those two teams have Georgia at home.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd wonder how many other losses you project on either of those schedules for Texas or like if those two teams take care of business against Georgia, you think they have an excellent chance. I mean, granted you have other games to navigate, but I would say in the case of both Texas and Alabama, having Georgia at home is a huge that's a huge benefit in a race where it could turn into a 3 or 4 team race at the top of the conference.
I think it's liable to. Yeah.
And having a tiebreaker like that in a home game, if they can win the game, it would be massive. I think on paper Georgia's probably got the best roster, but I also see a path for Texas and Bama to both beat Georgia at home and play in the SEC championship game.
Right. LSU was number 5, a pretty solid 5th. Missouri at 6, Tennessee 7, and Oklahoma 8, and the top 8. Are separated. There's pretty good separation between number 8 and number 9, and then between number 9 and number 10. So your top 8 pretty solidly with LSU, Missouri, Tennessee, and Oklahoma, the second 4. Texas A&M is number 9, and they're nearly 400 points back of Oklahoma, and they are 302 points ahead of number 10, Auburn. The Auburn barely ahead of Kentucky for the number 10 spot, just 11 points separating them. Then Florida is picked number 12, South Carolina 13, Arkansas, Mississippi State, and Vandy rounding out the SEC preseason predictions by the media. Any surprises to you really in there? I'm not very surprised at any of the picks.
I mean, I would have probably guessed the media was going to pick Kentucky over Auburn just because of Kentucky having a little bit more success recently than Auburn in the conference. I think it's close, though. I think you can totally justify.
And the game is in Lexington, Kentucky does have – I mean, it's Brock Vandegrift, but they have an unproven quarterback.
Yeah, it's a brand new – I mean, that's one of the wild cards. I'd say, we were talking about that with – I think it was with Ferguson yesterday, the thought of the different quarterbacks that mm-hmm. Jackson Arnold probably qualifies because of his relative inexperience. Garrett Nussmeier certainly, because you feel as though he's been waiting in the wings, but you don't really know all that much about how he's going to do. And I would say Brock Vandegrift probably, and Nico at Tennessee. Like there are multiple quarterbacks where you could say, I mean, it could go. I mean, if they're a star immediately. You don't see that all that often in college football, but you've seen it. You've seen guys who from the moment they take the field are difference makers that can raise the level of the program around them. If Tennessee or Oklahoma or LSU or Kentucky has one of those at quarterback, it could be a very different story as far as where they finish versus where they were projected.
And we were talking before media days that we expected the top three pick team, top three teams to be Georgia, Texas, Alabama, in whatever order. And their quarterbacks are in exactly that same order. Carson Beck's the number one preseason quarterback. Quinn Ewers of Texas, number two. And Jalen Milroe mm-hmm. is number three.
Little surprise Beck was able to beat out Ewers for that in Texas.
I thought the home voting might help Quinn.
Wouldn't be surprised if Milroe had the best season of the three, to be completely honest with you, with the way he was playing at the end of the year and the difference he can make with his feet as well. Like, I wouldn't be shocked at all if Jalen Milroe. I think that Milroe... You have to remember it's similar to Peyton Thorne in that it's a very different offseason for Jalen Milroe than it was last year, right? Mm-hmm. You think, I mean, he wasn't, how often was, how much, how many times was he taking first team reps? It was a competition well into the season.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Well, Alabama. I mean, he didn't even play the South Florida game.
But
then it's a different offense for him too.
It's a different offense, but it's at least
his offense.
Yes, it's an offense. I mean, I heard. I'm trying to remember who was making the point of it's so important to be able to, when you know who your quarterback is all off season, and you get to, this was Lebby talking about how when you know, it was, you know, the importance of getting, Lebby knew he was going to bring in a transfer portal quarterback, mm-hmm. but he wanted that quarterback in January because sure. the thought of trying to bring in a quarterback after the spring and bring them up to speed. But Lebby and Blake Shapen made points about that. Blake Shapen, the quarterback at Mississippi State from Baylor, you know, he thought trying to come in after spring practice and do everything you need to be an effective quarterback, it's probably too much, especially if you're jumping into the SEC. Hearing him say that, it's like, well, Jaden Daniels tried that, and it didn't go all that well in year one.
No, you're right.
Peyton Thorne tried that last mm-hmm. year, and it you know, there were uneven results. And the thought of, you know, having
sometimes you've got to take those guys because they're better than what you have.
Oh, certainly. Right? But when you know who your quarterback is all offseason, and you get to tailor the offense to what that guy does well and what that guy doesn't do well, and that guy gets the reps. I heard over and over again how valuable reps are at that position this week. It came up when folks were talking about evaluating and improving and developing their quarterbacks. It's like the reps matter. And when you have a quarterback who missed all the spring practice reps, it's really impressive if they go out and play well, if they overcome that in year one, because we've seen some good quarterbacks who couldn't. We've right. seen some quarterbacks who you know, that's too much for them.
Yeah, and it takes a special person, like you say. I mean, it's so important, not only the reps, but just getting to know each other, practice habits, knowing the coaches, knowing the routine. It's all so important. So the longer you can keep them and get them and have them, it's the better.
We need to get to our first break of the afternoon. Love for you to join in here on the Friday edition of The Drive.
Jessica Samuel with Opelika Power.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon, 23 minutes after 4 o'clock. Bill, Dan, Don, and Drew. God, it's Triple D. Dan, yeah. Don, and Drew. And
3D. Me.
Yeah.
The show is live in 3D today.
That it is here on this Friday. And let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Randy is up first. Hey, Randy.
Hi. Yeah, this is my first time listening to your show. I'm actually visiting Auburn, playing in a tennis tournament here in your fine city. And I'm delighted to hear Coach Dunn, who, as we all know, has been a terrific coach at three SEC schools. I mean, his his experience. He's done such things as grad assistant under Johnny Majors and Lord Reggie White off the homecoming parade float. He's had Christmas dinner with the Hall of Famer Jan Stenerud. I mean, his wealth of knowledge is great. He's a great guy. I'm glad he's on your program. It makes it tremendous.
Hey, we're very fortunate to have Don in with us. So, you guys able to play with the weather?
We just got done in time. Yeah, yeah, and so hanging out at Don's house right now. You know, he's the grill master.
So, we know that.
He knows his barbecue and he knows his football. And his lovely wife right now is taking care of us at the house. So
that's great. That's
you're tremendous. In great hands.
You were invited, right?
Somewhat.
Okay. All right. Just making sure.
Well, I appreciate that, Randy. It means a lot, buddy. And you do a great job too. What you do. So
appreciate it, Coach Dunn.
I'll see you about an hour and a half.
It was a blessing.
Yes, sir.
Good hearing from you, Randy. You guys take care and good luck.
You guys take care of Coach Dunn for me.
We'll try. Yeah, he takes care. He takes care of us.
Speaking of which, Coach Dunn, today's the last day, right? At the old building.
Yep. Kind of sad. I'm kind of glad I get a couple of weeks off, unless Larry calls me to move stuff, which I doubt he will. But yeah, new building should be open in about 3 weeks, and very excited. But it is kind of a sad day. I think 1970.
It's. Golly, it's been there for nearly as long as I've been around here. So, yeah, that's that's good. I mean, what an impressive new facility.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's going to have the drive-through and much bigger, larger. And I know Larry's excited, especially for the the football season, because that's when we get slammed.
Oh, yeah.
That in the holidays.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we were talking a little while ago, Dan. You were mentioning all the discussion there was about quarterbacks and reps, and you were telling us we have some audio with Peyton Thorne actually addressing that very subject.
Yeah, I was able to ask Peyton Thorne a question about how the differences between this offseason and last offseason and how that could maybe lead to a more productive 2024 for the Auburn quarterback. Here's what he had to say.
You joined the team after spring practice. Last year, we've seen a lot of quarterbacks who have a better year two than year one, especially when they get a full offseason working with the team. Has it felt more like your team working as the starting quarterback all offseason, and could that have an impact on how you play this fall?
Yeah, no doubt. Like you said, having a full year is a huge difference. Last year, getting here in the middle of summer, obviously that's not ideal going into a new offense, a new team, a new atmosphere. Everything was different last year. And so having to figure that out in 3 months before the season started is not exactly easy. And so, I'm comfortable now with where I'm at. I know the basic things around me. I'm all settled into my own house, and so all that stuff is nice. Got to know all my teammates, got to know the coaches, and now we have a set plan and a full off season, like you said, a spring ball, a summer, and you're just familiar with everything. So, yeah, there's no doubt there's going to be more confidence that comes with that, and I think that good things are coming because of that.
That was Auburn quarterback Peyton Thorne answering my question yesterday at SEC Media Days about the I've speculated, and I get uncomfortable speculating on athletes' confidence, right? Because it's not something you can really measure in any meaningful way.
Right.
But I think it's safe to wonder if you had the most confident version of Peyton Thorne out there, because he had to, an abbreviated offseason with the team. He was competing to be the starting quarterback for much of fall, even during the season. There was a quarterback rotation that maybe limit. I can't imagine what that does to a quarterback's psyche, right? Believing that you're bad series or a bad throw away from the bench,
and the fact that you don't have the most confidence in your receiving corps,
which is something Hugh Freeze said in his answer. The idea that, and I think I sent that as well. Hugh Freeze talking about the three reasons you should expect a better Peyton Thorne this year, and one of them is he outlines when a quarterback's supposed to take a 3-step drop and throw a curl or throw a comebacker, and he doesn't think his receiver's going to win the matchup. He might get gun shy. That ball might not come out when it's supposed to, or that ball might not come out where it's supposed to. And that may have happened a lot last year with Peyton Thorne. That was something Hugh Freeze illuminated us on yesterday.
Exactly. And what fans would see is he's holding the ball too long.
Exactly.
Get rid of the ball.
Yeah, they're blaming the quarterback when it's not really his fault. all the time. Right, exactly.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. We have plenty of audio we can get to. We ran down the preseason predicted order of finish. We'll look at the all-SEC teams, but we'd love to hear from you. Come on in and join us as we continue here with the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon, 27 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Again, love for you to join in. Any thoughts or questions that you have? Let's run down the preseason all-conference teams that as selected by the media there at the SEC Media Days in Dallas. Mentioned four Auburn players, including Jarquez Hunter, first-team running back, along with Trevor Etienne of Georgia. The other Auburn representatives, Eugene Asante, who was one of the Auburn representatives there in Dallas.
Makes the third team?
Yeah.
One of the third-team linebackers?
Second or third team. And then, interestingly, the rest are kick specialists or kick returners, as Alex McPherson, who right now, I mean, we're hoping – gets everything cleared up and is ready to go this fall, was listed as the number one kickoff man and a third team kick, place kicker. So he was first team kickoff, third team place kicker, and then Keontae Scott was a third team kick return specialist.
Yeah, little surprised. Keontae couldn't crack in, but there are a lot of good defensive backs in this conference.
I'm more than a little surprised at
Rivaldo Fairweather.
Who was an all-conference tight, who made third-team all-conference last year and is returning, is not on the first three teams.
Yeah, it's a bit of a surprise. Granted, you're factoring in that, and that's not one where Oklahoma and Texas came in with really highly touted tight ends to bump Rivaldo out either.
That's just he wasn't there at media days and people forgot about him.
Well, I get why people would look at Mason Taylor as a breakout candidate this year. He's been very. I mean, that guy has started every game for 2 years at LSU at tight end. He looks exactly like his father, Jason Taylor. That's really all you need to know, right? Is that he looks just like Jason, who was a defensive end for the all NFL Hall of Famer for the. By the way, his uncle Zach Thomas. So he's doing pretty well.
Bloodline.
Mason Taylor is, and he looks the part of an NFL tight end. If you told me he was going to break out this year, like, I wouldn't be shocked at all. But I had Rivaldo in my and I know people really like is Oscar Delp the Stanford transfer who's coming in?
He's third team.
Yeah, and I believe he's the Stanford transfer. I might have him mixed up with another.
He's the Georgia. Well, he's the Georgia tight end.
But yeah, he's going to be a big factor in that offense this year as well. So no, Oscar Delp's not the one who transferred in from Stanford. There's a different tight end in the Georgia room who was an all conference guy at Stanford before coming over. So I mean, there's competition there for Rivaldo. I'm a little surprised he was left off the list myself.
Well, that's just a little motivation for him and for Auburn.
Wouldn't be surprised. You know what? I tell you what. I wouldn't be surprised at all if at the end of the season, Jalen McLeod is flirting with one of these all conference recognitions. If he can pack up a couple of sacks as a pass rusher, yep. I think there could be a spot for him somewhere on the defensive line or linebacker, depending on how they classify him. I think there could be a spot somewhere for Jalen McLeod.
All right. Here is your first team preseason all conference offense as selected by the media in Dallas. Carson Beck, quarterback from Georgia. His teammate Trevor Etienne as one of the running backs, along with Auburn's Jarquez Hunter. The receivers are Luther Burden of Missouri and Trey Harris of Ole Miss. Tied in is Caden Prescorn of Ole Miss. The offensive line has Tyler Booker of Alabama, Will Campbell of LSU, Kevin Banks of Texas, Tate Ratledge of Georgia, and the center is Cooper Mays of Tennessee.
I will say I went 5 for 5 with the offensive line. I thought that was probably what it was going to look like. And I mean, Ratledge, Campbell, and Mays have been included on a lot of All-American lists. Mm-hmm. Not just about being the best in the SEC. Kelvin Banks was considered one of the best offensive linemen in the Big 12 last year, coming over from Texas. So, I mean, that's one where I would have loved for Percy or Too Tall or Dylan Wade to get consideration on the Auburn offensive line for one of these spots. There are so many. Connor Lue, for that matter, would have been great, but there are so many really experienced offensive linemen that folks believe are at the, you know, at the top of their position in college football in this league, and a couple of them are in the first team of the SEC. Cooper Mays, probably considered the best center in college football these days over at Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. All right, the second team offense has Quinn Ewers of Texas at quarterback, Rocket Sanders of South Carolina. It's funny saying Rocket Sanders of South Carolina at running back, and a tie between C.J. Baxter of Texas and Montrell Johnson of Florida as the other running back.
Isn't it kind of unusual? I mean, look, go wherever you want. You would think that a guy leaving Arkansas in the transfer portal would have picked more of a contender. Like, I'm a little surprised Rocket Sanders went to South Carolina. Like, I thought that's a guy who would have been able to punch his ticket to virtually anywhere. And I would have thought, I mean, like, maybe a lot of factors are right at play here in how South Carolina lands a player like that. Yeah. But I'm just wondering if, I'm a little surprised that's not somebody who, and I know people call him a front runner. If he left Arkansas and went to a team that was going to be a preseason top 5 or top 10 team this year. But
you know what? I mean, the people calling, the guys that transferred to Alabama and Georgia front runners, doesn't bother them too much when they can show them the jewelry they have, the championship rings.
You know why they call you a front runner? Because the team's in the front.
Yeah, that's right.
That's part of being a front runner.
All right, the receivers on the second
team.
The
view doesn't change if you're not a front runner, is what I've been told.
Right.
The receivers on the second team are Isaiah Bond of Texas and Kyron Lacy of LSU. The tight end, Mason Taylor of LSU. And then the offensive line, Emory Jones of LSU, Caden Proctor of Alabama, Xavier Truss and Dylan Fairchild of Georgia. And the center is Parker Brailsford of Alabama.
Cooper, by the way, is Cade Mays' brother. You remember Cade was the Georgia offensive lineman, mm-hmm, moved to Tennessee. Now he's starting in Carolina in the NFL. Like, it's a pretty good pedigree there.
I mean, it's a Tennessee family.
Yeah,
he went to Georgia, but it was like a surprise that he didn't go to Tennessee. That just tells you how bad things were at Tennessee, right back then. Third team offense has Jalen Milroe of Alabama at quarterback. The running back.
That's an inspiration for Auburn too. The way Tennessee, like, when you think about the dark era of Tennessee football, you start with whatever Kiffin's last, Fulmer's last year, or Kiffin's last year, whenever you want to start, you know, the downturn, Saban's arrival in Alabama, you can point to it, whatever the catalyst is there. Yeah. Like, from that until when Heupel started winning again,
right?
Like, it was, I mean, it really was like a
long time.
Yeah, and it had people wondering, like, is this a thing that's ever coming back? Exactly. Like, is Tennessee going to be one of those? Is it going to be?
Yeah, it'll just automatically turn around in a year or two. You look at Tennessee, or you look at Nebraska.
Yes.
What's the number I saw the other day?
Wow.
20 consecutive seasons of at least 4 losses for the University of Nebraska.
And when we were growing up, that was unheard of.
They didn't lose 20 games in 20 years.
No.
You know, another, and I get no enjoyment out of pointing this out, I would throw Miami in the pile too of programs like that,
because
if you look at 1980 to 2005 for Miami, and then look at 2005 to now, it's stark.
Yeah.
You know, the differences between those two eras.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't bet against Miami ever coming back. I do feel like the conditions in college football are making it tougher for that kind of program to have a resurgence, because the players that Miami used to get, like, secret's out. Everybody's right after those players now, and I mean, maybe they can. I think with the right people in place, mm-hmm, absolutely, there's a chance of it. Cristobal was a very in demand coach not all that long ago. But I think that's another program you start talking about, like, an era that isn't this era, you know, right, was their championship period.
You know, even Florida State until the last year. They went, everybody goes through a dip, but some of those big programs, like Bill was saying, Tennessee, I mean, they were on top forever, it seemed like, and then wow. Mm-hmm. Disappeared.
And we wondered, and I think there's maybe the similarity between Tennessee and Nebraska would be, mm-hmm, so much of it was built on non-regional recruiting. Like when all your players are coming.
Nebraska had that famous walk-on program.
Right, but when your players aren't coming from the neighborhood, right?
When the immediate locale is not producing a lot of talent.
The winds can change, and it's tougher to build a program that way when you haven't been winning the last couple of years, and you can't convince.
Tennessee traditionally has not been a great football state. A few schools, Chattanooga had a couple, mm-hmm. Knoxville maybe one or two, Memphis, but –
Memphis sometimes doesn't even feel like it's Tennessee.
Exactly.
You know? Carolinas, Atlanta, and South Florida, right? We're traditionally
your
Tennessee.
They go into Ohio.
And they would go to California.
Yeah. They'd go to Southern California.
Sure would. Yeah.
Brew McCoy's still there. Brew McCoy, year seven, I believe, of college football for a guy who there's an injury red shirt and I think a COVID year in there. Like Brew McCoy has been around. I want to say he's the same year as Bo. I want to say either 2018 or 2019 was Brew McCoy's first year in college football, and he's sticking around. Difference making receiver when he's out there.
Yeah.
But you'd rather have him than not have him. But he's ringing every drop mm-hmm. out of his college eligibility.
Yeah, I won't go through the entire third team. I will say that you can see how well Georgia's represented. I think four of their five offensive linemen are on one of the three teams. I mentioned Jalen Milroe, the quarterback. That is the highlight of the third team. The first team defense has on the defensive line, James Pierce of Tennessee, Walter Nolan of Ole Miss, Deion Walker of Kentucky, and Azir Stackhouse of Georgia. The linebackers are Harold Perkins of LSU, Danny Stutzman of Oklahoma, and then a tie for the third spot with Deontay Lawson of Alabama and Michael Williams of Georgia. The secondary, Malachi Starks of Georgia, Malachi Moore of Alabama, Billy Bowman of Oklahoma, and Maxwell Hairston of Kentucky. Those are the first Oklahoma guys that I've called.
Stutzman and Bowman?
Yeah,
Stutzman and Bowman. I mean, which is surprising, too, because defense was a problem in the first couple years for Oklahoma. You know, after Lincoln Riley left. One of the more amazing stats, the idea that we're entering, this is about to be a third year for Venables. There is not a defensive player on the team that Venables didn't sign. Every defense,
as badly as they were playing, they needed to be turned over.
The thought that they have completely turned over that side of the ball. There is not a defensive player left who was a Lincoln Riley signee on the roster. They have made things over that dramatically by working in a different system, and it was a problem the first couple of years. You feel like Brent Venables, he'll point out, you know, every player on the roster now signed to play for him, you know, more or less, and certainly on the defensive side of the ball, you know, it's a unit that he's put his stamp on.
All right, we'll run down the first team specialist. We told you that Alex McPherson is the kickoff man. The punter is James Burnup of Alabama.
What's the latest on Big Mac, by the way? I know we talked about it a little bit yesterday. It doesn't seem like
Hugh Freeze told at least one group of the media that he is still, you know, he's had a gastrointestinal problem, and they think they have it figured out. But I mean, he's got to gain some weight so he can gain strength and be able to get out there and kick. Auburn's very, very, very fortunate that they brought in Towns Magoo.
Yeah, football.
I mean, he's not a big guy anyway.
Yeah.
He was listed at 150. And, you know, if he's had trouble keeping that weight.
Yes. No, I mean, you're losing. I mean, look,
when was the last time you or I were?
I don't know, man. The doctor lifted me up, you know, at 150 pounds, I think, back at Reagan National. You know, it doesn't seem like a football issue,
no,
right?
It's a get
healthy, yes. Regain your quality of life, get to live a normal, healthy life, and then also maybe pivot back to football. But yeah, they'd be scrambling if Towns Magoo hadn't picked Auburn. I wonder if it'd be a bit of a crisis, or are you checking if Chapman can kick field goals or seeing something like that. Like somebody. I wonder what you'd be doing in that situation, because yeah, what a luxury it is to have Towns Magoo.
Your first team place kicker is Bert Auburn of Texas, the long snapper Neyland Hibbett of Alabama, the return specialist Barry and Brown of Kentucky, and the all purpose. A return man is Xavion Thomas of LSU. And as we mentioned, McPherson also the third-team place kicker and Keontae Scott, the third team kick return specialist. So those are your highlights and the Auburn members of the preseason all conference team. All right, you were talking, and we've got more audio. We want to get to some of that. Again, your calls come first. If you've got something, we'd love to hear from you. But while we have the time, we're going to run some of the audio from SEC Media Days. And Dan had quite a few questions for the big youngster, Keldrick Faulk, who was the youngest player to ever represent Auburn at SEC Media Days. We're going to do that after. Yeah, we're going to do that after our break. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. So stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
On ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, final segment of hour number one. And as we were talking, we have plenty of audio. Dan and Jacob doing a great job covering the SEC Media Days. Dan, you said you got quite a few questions in with Keldrick Faulk.
Yeah, I was able to ask Keldrick a couple of questions during his time in the electronic media room. Thought we'd give you a chance to hear our back and forth over about a couple of interesting subjects there with the Auburn sophomore.
Dan Peck, ESPN 106.7 in Auburn. Keldrick, you're the first sophomore ever selected for SEC Media Days by Auburn. What kind of honor is that, and what does it mean to be up there representing your team?
It means a lot. It shows that I'm becoming the leader on my team, and I'm leading the right way on my team.
Marcus Harris moving on to the NFL after an outstanding Auburn career. You got to play with him your first year, work alongside him. What did you learn, and what did you see working with Marcus?
I learned how to work like a pro athlete. Marcus Harris was one of the hardest workers on our team. I also learned how to lead like a leader should. He was one of our vocal leaders. He was also a leader by example. So every day I try to, mimic that and perfect it to the best of my ability.
A lot of new faces on the defensive line, some incoming transfers, some freshmen. What can you say about the rest of the group on the Auburn defensive line and who's really stepped it up this offseason?
I can say Keyron Crawford and Jalen McLeod are two guys on the edge that are really stepping up. Like, they're not vocal leaders per se, but they're more, we're going to show you, like, this is how it's supposed to be done type of leaders. Like, they're examples. They're example leaders. And you got Philip Bleedy from, I think he came from Indiana. He's one of those guys, another guy, like, he leads by example. He's one of our hardest workers on the team. Like, he keeps his head down every day, and he attacks every workout, every practice, every run like it's his last.
You're one of several Hugh Freeze recruits from the immediate area, JC's from nearby, Cam Coleman, a lot of guys. Is it more special playing for a school really close to where you grew up and sort of something that feels like home?
Yeah, it's pretty special because you get to represent where you're from. And then also you got your hometown, like, not too far down the road. They're behind you 10 toes. So you represent them and represent your home state. It's a pretty big deal to me.
So. You got on the field a lot as a true freshman. There are true freshmen this year for Auburn that want to play a lot. What's your advice, and what are the most important things they need to do if they want to contribute as true freshmen?
My advice is it can be done. Like, it's not nothing that, is impossible to do. It's going to be hard because you coming from playing high school ball where you're better than most everybody on the field. Now you're playing against people that, are better or as good as you. So now you just got to work 10 times harder to become that player you want to be. And once you become that player, you get seen, and now you're stepping on the field.
That was Auburn defensive end Keldrick Faulk talking about a couple of things from his from his first year to his second year. I was able to get a couple questions there to him.
He doesn't come across, and he hasn't when we've had any chance to be around him, as a kid who's like maybe 19 now.
No, he doesn't seem overwhelmed, or and I think that, you know, I don't know if this was in the answer, but he talked about really trying to learn as much as possible from Marcus Harris in their 1 year together. You know, he said Marcus taught him how to be a professional athlete. Marcus had, right. Taught him how to be a leader, on and off the field, leading by example. Like these are things where I think it's really valuable that year that he got to spend. I asked Coach, you probably love it when the young guys when a young guy with a lot of potential decides to stick himself to a veteran,
right.
and try to pick up everything. That's right. that's a sign of a future leader.
That's a sign of a future leader. I'm very impressed with this young man, the interview, the way he conducted himself, the things he said. He's eager. He wants to learn, and he's very smart to do that. You know, sometimes there's a little jealousy. There's a little, hey, I'm better than this guy or not as good as this guy. But very impressed with that young man. I look for big things out of him for sure.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Friday Drive. Our top of the hour break, then we have another hour to go. Love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390. Text us on the Drive text box, 334-564-1840. We have some audio from Hugh Freeze at the Dallas Ambush that we will play for you. But your calls come first as we head into hour number two of the Friday Drive.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in hour number two of the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, Don, and Drew. Yeah, that's
B and the D's.
A lot of D's. How many of does? No, it's like, yeah, that's great. Welcome in, everybody. Love for you to join us on the Friday Drive. Dan back from Dallas, the side of SEC Media Days. Next year it'll be in Atlanta. I wonder, was there any feel, Dan, for how soon we may be headed anywhere near that west again for a media days?
You know, I so the rumor going around before Sankey made the announcement of Atlanta was Orlando. And I do wonder if with the SEC's involvement with ESPN and ESPN's parent company being Disney, mm-hmm. I wonder if there would be...
Yeah, there'd been speculation of Charlotte just because of, the home base for the SEC.
Right. I wonder if Disney's Orlando ties might make Orlando an attractive spot for SEC Media Days.
Granted, boy, that's a long way for a lot of people.
So is Dallas.
You're right.
I mean, so is Dallas.
And, I mean, Dallas is sort of on one end. Orlando would be at another edge.
I mean,
Nashville was more centralized. Birmingham would be more centralized. New Orleans is something we were talking about yesterday.
I don't think they're opposed to moving it to a corner of the conference, though,
well,
as evidenced
not.
By the fact that they're doing Dallas. So I wonder if Oklahoma City could be in consideration. I wonder if they would consider St. Louis. I wonder if they would think about Houston. I think there are big cities on the western side. You know what they could do? Is they could do it like the All-Star game, and they could have an East and a West. You know, every year you take turns. So maybe 1 year you do it in Atlanta or Birmingham or a Florida city or Charlotte or, the Nashville. You do it somewhere where it's maybe more accessible for the teams on the eastern side of the league. And then the following year you're going to do it in St. Louis or Dallas or Houston or Little Rock.
Man. I'm all for, like, why not do it somewhere where that's more centralized where you're not having to go. I guess it that way it favors the ones that are on – either side.
That's right. And we are close to the geographic center of the conference
so
now as we say that too. But so it's no, I do wonder if they but I wonder if they want to get exotic and move it around to different places too. I think a St. Louis, a media days could be a cool thing as a one off or a
maybe we can just wait and see where the Major League All-Star game is every
maybe
year
they follow the All-Star
it around.
Next year we're at Petco or something.
Yeah.
We go to San Diego or Seattle or something. Well, that's ACC country now.
Yeah.
With Stanford and
that's
Stanford
right, the Atlantic
and,
Coast.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, next ACC Media Days should be in San Francisco next year. That would be incredible for to welcome Cal and Stanford into the conference by moving the Media Days to Bay Area.
I don't think they quite moved the needle as much as Texas and Oklahoma did in the SEC.
No.
But I think, I mean, look, Atlanta, Birmingham, and Nashville would be, you know, pretty solid candidates for if you wanted to have a permanent location for SEC media.
Birmingham is still the SEC, the home of the SEC office.
But I think that there seems to be a desire to bounce this around to different places too, and like have this as a vaguely get him a paper towel, Drew. He probably doesn't want to be using. Okay. All right, cool. So you probably don't want to move it around too much like that.
Yeah. So anyway, Dan's back from Dallas. We have a lot of audio that we can run for you. As a matter of fact, Jacob Goins, who handles on the line, got audio from Hugh Freeze at the Dallas ambush the other night. We have that. We can run some of that for you. We'd love to hear from you, though, here in hour number two of The Drive. The second hour of the show, by the way, is brought to you, as always, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can join us by calling The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
We mentioned in hour number one, Auburn preseason picked number 10 in the SEC by the media there in Dallas. Georgia, the overwhelming favorite to win the conference, despite, as Dan was saying, they play on the road at the teams picked 2, 3, and 4. Texas, Alabama, and Ole Miss are picked 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, respectively. And Georgia plays on the road at all three of those.
How about this?
Teams.
Between Georgia, Bama, Texas, and Ole Miss, is there a team you think has an outsized chance of not getting into the top four by the end of the season? Is there one you're more skeptical of?
I'm more skeptical than the other three? Of Ole Miss.
Understandable. I think people like the schedule. People like the roster.
Yep.
People like what they bring back. People like Lane. But it's still. I mean, it's fairly uncharted for Ole Miss to be.
Let's see it. I mean, I won't be amazed or astounded if they do. But we still got to see that they can do that. And it's not asking that much, I don't think, with the schedule they have and the talent they have to finish in the top four. But that's the team that I would think is the most likely to not get in there. I still think LSU, you mentioned Oklahoma, but LSU is an extremely talented team. I still think that even though I guess they're picked 5th, that's not exactly overlooking them, but it doesn't seem like there's much buzz at all about LSU.
Right. I think they're going to be a sleeper, like you say, Bill. They got a lot of guys on these teams, I noticed, too, which doesn't mean anything.
They always have talent.
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
LSU always
just
has
unusual
talent.
Last year, their defense. I mean, I was shocked.
Yep. Brian Kelly has made changes over there on that side of the ball.
Yeah, he's not afraid to do that, and that's why he's a good coach. And I'm like you. They're kind of a sleeper to me.
Yeah, so Auburn picked 10, 4 Auburn players making the preseason all-conference team. Jarquez Hunter, first-team running back. Eugene Asante, a third-team at linebacker. Alex McPherson, first-team as the kickoff specialist. He also made third-team as the place kicker. And then Keontae Scott, third-team kick return specialist.
Yeah, like I said in the first hour, a little surprised Keontae couldn't get some consideration as a defensive back just because of how much he's played the last two seasons. But yeah, it's a loaded group of defensive backs with experience.
You're talking about 12 or 13 guys that made the first three teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of defensive backs who have played the last two, three seasons. Maybe Auburn's lack of on-field success and wins probably hurts guys like Keontae from being able to, you know, if Auburn's coming back as a top five or top six team in the league, it's easier to put guys like, I mean, Keontae, I think Eugene Asante would probably beat McLeod. Like those are guys who would have been able to push for a better spot or inclusion on that list if folks were maybe more confident in Auburn or had more faith in Auburn based on the last couple of seasons.
And
won't be surprised if any of those guys, by the way, between Asante, McLeod, Keontae Scott, I would put Keldrick Falk in there. Like, those are guys who I'm not sure it'll be all that surprising if they have the kind of season that puts them in the bottom of the puts them in consideration for an all-conference spot by the end of the season. It seems like those are guys who have that. I mean, we only saw so much of Austin Keys last year, mm-hmm. but that's a guy who's been a high-level linebacker yeah. at times in the SEC mm-hmm. too. Missed a lot of last year with an injury, but if Austin Keys is healthy and Auburn is good, I think Austin Keys is somebody who could be in consideration for an all-conference spot.
I think, and we talked about it in the first hour, Rivaldo. I mean, Rivaldo is now not the main concern, or we'll see. I mean, I don't expect him to be the main concern at receiver because he was this past year. There's no question. I mean, Auburn just didn't have the deep threats or the guys that defenses would fear and have to really worry about stopping. Rivaldo had to be that from the tight end spot. Mm-hmm. I think he has a chance to put up much better numbers. Maybe not so much. I mean, I think he'll have more receptions, but I think his yards per catch is probably going to go up a lot because they're going to have to be covering him with linebackers or nickel guys. Yes. They're not going to be able to put a corner on Rivaldo Fairweather the way we saw this past year.
That's exactly right, because now you have the speed at the corners, the outside receivers that can run people off, and he's going to be a lot more involved, I would think, underneath. And, the first thing I'm doing Monday morning when I go into my meeting with the players, I'm just writing a number 10 up in the corner, leaving it up on the chalkboard. Mm-hmm. As a coach, that's a great spot for me. I don't want to be ranked number one or two, unless down the road you do. If you understand what I'm saying, I would use that as motivation. I wouldn't say that. I'd just write 10. They know.
Hey, you're going in with your position, guys. Yeah. You're going in and go, hey, no, they don't think any of you guys are good enough to even be on the
zero.
First team.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even have to write. You don't even have to write the one,
no,
coach.
Just put a zero. Exactly, a 10-0, 10-0.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it really is. It's something that you would hope, especially on a team with potential.
Yeah.
You would hope it motivates some guys.
Yeah. And it still works. These kids, every one of them read that,
Oh, yeah, know it.
Yeah.
And we talked about it yesterday. I mean, I really feel like, I mean, Coach Freeze seems to be pretty comfortable. I won't say confident, but, I mean, he seems pleased with where Auburn is right here to start year two.
Yeah. The point you just made about Rivaldo is a good one, too, because I think people forget how difficult it is for the tight end when you're a 10 yards and in offense, right? As opposed to
if
an offense.
Can't run anybody off. I mean, all they, like Bill said, they just wait on. They know they're going to the tight end.
There's guys near the tight end all the time, and if you're worried about the receivers,
if you can't run the ball and you can't go deep, and there's no threat. So now we're gonna dump it to the tight end because that's the easiest throw.
Yeah, you always talk about defenders in the box, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's not just a run strategy, defenders in the box.
That's also one of the few guys that Peyton Thorne had confidence in.
Exactly. They caught the ball when mm-hmm. he threw it. And like Bill said, now they're going to have to cover him with a linebacker instead of a nickel or a whatever they call those guys now. I heard on Kirby Smart, I forgot what they call those guys now.
What, your stars and your stars and your bucks and
now
your
they have some stars for sure.
Well, they do. Yeah. They have some five a lot of five stars.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean instead of a safety type or a linebacker.
Right.
That's sort of like a hybrid, like outside linebacker, defensive end coverage.
Yeah.
I mean it's a position. I mean you would think that the defensive positions evolve as the offense evolves. What you need to stop these offenses changes.
And that's what's happened. You're exactly right. Over the last 10 years with the run and shoot or whatever you want to call it, you couldn't leave that old Mike linebacker out there covering a guy in space.
You used to look at a guy who could rush the passer as a defensive end and play the run as a linebacker and cover. You used to think of that guy as a unicorn.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's a guy that every team needs to have now because the offense is
at more than one position.
At more than one position. I mean, that's what you need
to
have.
Carlos Dansby would have been a great star.
Ooh.
You're not kidding.
But you need about three or four of those guys now. Yeah. Because you spread out all over the place.
Because Carlos Dansby was somebody who had the length and size to stay with you.
The speed,
What an athlete.
Ooh. No kidding. All right, 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. We're going to let you hear some of the comments from Hugh Freeze at the Dallas Ambush in a little while, but let's get to the Drive Hotline. And Yellowhammer is up. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, guys. Well, I just wanted to jump on this thing about the tight end. I was always thinking, why don't we ever hear the tight end? I was in
Well, this past year, that's pretty much all I could do.
And I was building it on the model that the New England Patriots were doing a few years ago. I was thinking, this is a dangerous thing for a defensive back. You know, this big, giant guy is coming out here, yeah, and I've got to cover the speed guys and this guy. Holy cow.
Yeah, but when defenses don't believe in your receivers, right, the tight ends aren't going to get as open as they were. I mean, New England had receivers that Tom Brady could throw to that could also beat you. I mean, yes, Gronk and the different guys that Brady had there, you know, at times. I mean, they could be really dangerous receiving weapons, and their ability as blockers, you know, made the running game more dangerous, and they were out there too. You know, the hope is you have those kind of complete, you know, guys every down sort of tight ends. But I mean, even if Rivaldo is one of those kind of players, if defenses don't think that Auburn has enough at receiver, then he's going to struggle to get open.
But mix in the run game, and now the defensive backs really got a nightmare.
You're exactly right.
But it all comes back to sort of concealing weaknesses, right? Like if receiver, and that's a tough one to conceal. Right. If receiver's a weakness, you know, the defense is going to play accordingly.
Gonna Everybody's going to be in the box.
Yep, they're going to dare you to throw it deep. Dare you to throw situations where the receivers won his matchup one on one.
Yep.
And in those situations, if you throw that one and the receiver didn't win his matchup, it's second down, or first down going the other way.
Exactly.
Well, the cool thing is that he's always a tackle eligible in a way.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons we appreciate the phone call, Yellowhammer. I think that's one of the reasons that position has, I mean, you think about when Tony Gonzalez and Antonio Gates were novelties 20 years ago, and now I think that it's, you know, teams recognize, like, you'd better have.
Yeah, it would seem like this is a cool thing to try an athletic guy that's a basketball player that's really tall and try him at tight end, and it's like, oh, that worked. That worked really well. Let's find some more guys.
Big, strong, tall guy who can run and catch, you know, and jump and block.
The kid at Georgia last year, he was a difference maker. When he got hurt, they didn't win.
Yep, and if he'd been too hurt to play in the ballgame, Auburn may have beaten Georgia last year.
And I'm really curious to see. I mean, even with Delp, a tight end that they really like at Georgia, I'm curious to see what without Bowers and McConkey, because that was the other guy when Beck ran into trouble.
Yep.
he was calling those two numbers.
Right.
And this is a year without those two.
It'll be different.
Now Georgia's got. I mean, they went out and got Dominic Lovett. They went out and got Ra-Ra Thomas. They've got Oscar Delp, who's an all conference tight end. Like they went out and got ETN. Like they've done pretty well making sure that Carson Beck isn't alone on offense out there. But you're still replacing Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey.
Right.
Like that's still a
two proven players.
Woo. And it's not like Carson Beck was playing before those guys were. I mean, Carson Beck's been the starter 1 year, and it was a lot of Bowers and McConkey in that 1 year. You wonder what happens with those two guys in the NFL.
Be interesting.
I see where. Let's see. When were the UCLA games that were canceled?
27-28, right?
All right. I see that it's being reported that Auburn's got Jacksonville State. Rich Rod, coming to Auburn in 26.
Wow, which would be almost. I mean, where did we play West Virginia with Rich Rod? There wasn't that. Was he there?
Yes.
Or was he at Michigan by then?
No, he was there.
No. It was Stewart, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think. I think he might have been. I think that might have been the first year without him. He might have.
It may have been.
Yeah, it was the Bill Stewart. Guy. Was it yes. Bill Stewart great replaced guy. Him? Yeah, that was. But it's still. I mean, yeah, Rich Rod was. I mean, that's.
Boy, he went.
Yeah, up and down. I mean, West Virginia, Michigan, Arizona.
Chance at Alabama, I think.
Almost. It was offered the Alabama job when he was the West Virginia coach.
Yeah, the reports were, I mean, his wife.
Turned it down.
That's the reason he didn't take the job. And instead, Alabama had to settle for Nick Saban.
And he did get the Michigan job a year later. Yeah. So it was like not the craziest miscalculation,
I forgot he was at Michigan.
He was the Michigan coach. Yeah. Yeah, he took he left West Virginia. And that was I remember thinking about it then. Like Michigan was the
another team we were talking about.
But you talk about I formation, traditional football, and then you bring in this guy from the future, right? Like you bring in Rich Rodriguez running the I mean, you bring in a guy running a I mean, remember the late Ryan Mallett was at Michigan as a projected top five pick in the NFL draft, and Rich Rod gets there and they say, you can't run his offense. Yep. You need to go play for Bobby Petrino at Arkansas because you're not going to fit in the Rich Rod offense. But you know what? When he finds his quarterback, they've had some pretty good. How good would Pat White be in this era?
Bring that up.
Thinking about
having a good day.
Pat White, Denard Robinson. I mean, some of those guys that he was able to have, you know, running around his offense. You know, I guess the consolation would be Pat White did that to a lot of teams, Coach.
Well,
like that. I mean, he was somebody who
he's pretty special.
Yeah, I mean, who folks didn't really think of as a quarterback.
Every time I hear "Take Me Home, Country Roads," I just throw up.
Oh, yeah. That was a
it probably hurt a little more the fact that he's from Mobile,
too. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of like the guy we didn't take from up
Rivers?
Rivers.
Yeah.
Oh, we're gonna make you a tight end. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
hindsight.
I think that was Pat White was one where around college football, especially big time college football, the belief was you're not a quarterback.
No, he can't throw it good enough.
Nick Marshall-esque. It's like, you know what? Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to play quarterback.
The two guys Alabama had, the little Jalen Hurts.
Oh, sure. Tua. I mean, to an extent. Yeah. I mean, yeah, the guys that would have had their, would have been moved to a different position in a different era of football, but you find the right fit for him. I don't think Denard Robinson would have been everybody's quarterback with his passing limitations and his size. Yeah. I mean, these guys who get moved positions in the NFL, but boy does Rich Rod find him and figure out how to remember that. Oh, what was his name? Drew, the Arizona quarterback. Remember the Arizona quarterback that was running for 300 yards a game.
Phenomenal.
He was running for 300 yards a game by the end of that time. He was Jaden something, I want to say, but I mean, Rich Rod's had those kind of guys. So Auburn's hosting by the way,
Jack State in September of 26.
There was a close call against Jack State, wasn't there?
Yes, it was.
Yes.
Wasn't there a decade ago?
Yes.
That was I want to say 15. Was that right after
15.
Louisville?
15. Yes.
I think it was right after the Louisville game. That was when Auburn same season as Auburn has the interceptions against. I mean, they beat Louisville in the opener.
It might have been a little earlier than that.
Maybe it wasn't 15. Maybe it was, I'm going to look up when that Auburn Jacksonville State game.
Was that the onside kick?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, we need to get to our first break here of hour number two. Again, we've got some audio from Hugh Freeze that we'll let you hear, but we'd love for you to join us here on the Friday Drive.
Auburn Plaza Bar.
Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 26 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Friday afternoon. Sun's coming back out. Did look at the weather, and there's a better than 50-50 chance of rain for the next couple of days. So it's going to be hit or miss. That's the way it is summertime.
Yep.
But I agree with what you said. I don't remember if you said this on the air or not, but I mean, you know, it's not 90 degrees. It's not 95 degrees. It's okay. Just sort of enjoy it. A little rain doesn't hurt anything. I mean, unless you've got, you know, outdoor plans.
Yeah, we're going to get plenty of we're going to get plenty of 90 plus degree.
Oh yeah, there's plenty of heat.
No cloud coverage kind of days between now and the end of the season. So I'm okay with any sort of variety, even if it's a little bit cloudy, a little bit rainy. Hopefully nobody got their nobody had their weekend plans affected too dramatically by the weather we're supposed to have this this weekend.
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, as we said, you know, Auburn less than 2 weeks away from the start of fall practice on August 1st. Meanwhile, Major League Baseball, the unofficial second half, getting going after the All-Star. I don't think we even mentioned the All-Star game, did we? I don't think we did.
No, Ohtani homered, and that poor woman had the national anthem. Yeah. That was the home run derby.
That was the home run derby.
The anthem was good. We had the home run from. I mean, you had Skeens versus Judge, which people were really excited for. Soto draws the walk to get a one pitch at bat there with Skeens and Judge. You had the Ohtani homer, which was a lot of fun. I'll be honest with you.
And the American League wins again.
And the American League comes back and wins.
Pretty much the way it's gone. It's crazy because the National League dominated for so many years.
Right.
And now it's been all American League over the last decade.
Kid from the Oakland A's threw 105 or whatever it was fastest pitch in All-Star game history. They've only been tracking it scientifically since the mid 2000s or so.
I doubt anybody was throwing 105.
I think Chapman threw 104 mile an hour pitch in an All-Star game previously. But yeah, this guy Mason Miller from Oakland goes in the fifth inning and drops.
That's why he is one of the most coveted prospects in the trade in Major League Baseball with the trade deadline coming up. Trade deadline is July 30th. They didn't even put it at the last day of the month. It's July 30th instead of the 31st.
And we're getting. I wonder why that is.
I do not know. It's like a Tuesday.
Yeah, I was going to say if it was maybe a Friday or a Sunday or something, maybe that would have an impact on it. And we know that first day of fall practice for Auburn
is August 1st.
Yeah, just two days later. So we're under 2 weeks away from the first practice of the fall for Auburn. I imagine we'll hear from Hugh Freeze earlier that week. Traditionally, we hear from Coach during the first week as Auburn gets underway. And I mean, once you start getting to see a little bit of fall practice, Bill. Once we start showing up there on Saturdays to hear press conferences after scrimmages.
Oh yeah,
and stuff
hopefully. I mean, I'm fingers crossed. We're hoping we get similar access to what we had last year, where you get a chance to just eyeball them. We're gonna drag Don out there so that he can tell us what he's seeing.
Yeah.
Send him down and he can watch the defensive line work.
Yep.
While we're watching some other things. But looking forward to it. I even noticed that the roster has updated heights and weights from just a few weeks ago.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and there are a few guys that continue to get a little bit bigger. So I mean, I'm really looking. This is a roster that has had significant gains as far as size from this past spring.
Random baseball thing before we throw it to break. The Rockies and Georgia slugger Charlie Condon.
That's two of the top three picks in the draft have already signed.
Is there a chance Condon's up before the end of this season? Do you think the Rockies? Do you think the Rockies could give it a chance?
No, I don't think the Rockies will because they don't want any chance of him getting earlier to arbitration. I think he's good enough.
If you do it the final month, does it still impact?
I mean, I think they still want him. I believe Charlie Chase signed with the Reds too. So I mean, you've got two of the top three guys have already signed.
Yeah, Condon, who had just
37 homers for Georgia this past year.
Yeah, ridiculous season. I mean, he's going to Coors Field, but it doesn't matter. I mean, he'd be hitting for power.
Top three picks have all signed. I didn't realize
Bazana. Yeah,
Bazana signed with the Guardians. So.
Yeah, the catcher. So I mean, I think it's interesting to see if the Rockies. People are saying the Rockies had an excellent draft. They focused on older college players that could help immediately, and people are thinking they were able to get a couple of guys. ESPN's prospect expert has Charlie Condon right now as the fifth best player in the minors. He's got him as the number five prospect overall in baseball. The moment he enters the Rockies, we saw that last year with Skeens
and Cruz,
immediately rocketing into the top five, top ten of the prospect list. I think that could be more common with NIL extending college baseball careers.
I was going to say that tells you the state of college baseball now. How good the quality. Of talent that there is in college,
you're much better off. I want to be careful here, but it seems like unless you're a first round pick getting life changing bonus money, I would think that you're much better off spending 3 years.
Think of the lifestyle of being in college as opposed to riding buses.
Yeah,
in the minors.
as a prize prospect, and you know what? I imagine some of these baseball teams probably want guys to maybe you can outsource some of the development of these prospects mm-hmm. to the college programs for 3 or 4 years, and with NIL, there's financial considerations for these players. It's a different situation than it was a couple of years ago. But I think we could see more top college players getting drafted in the top 5, top 10, and immediately being slotted as among the top prospects in all of college, in all of minor league baseball. But yeah, Condon immediately jumping into the top 5 of ESPN.com's prospect list the moment he's drafted. They say you're immediately one of the top prospect in the Rockies organization immediately, and the one of the top prospects in all of Major League Baseball.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break, and hopefully we'll let you hear some of the comments from Hugh Freeze as he spoke to the Dallas Ambush just the other night. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Friday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, and we've got some audio. Jacob Goins on the line, who will be back on the air on Monday, has some audio from Hugh Freeze as he spoke to the Auburn Ambush that Andy Burcham was talking about, one in Houston that there was on Wednesday afternoon, one in Dallas on Wednesday night. I believe this is from the one in Dallas on Wednesday evening. Thought it would be interesting to listen to some of Coach Freeze's comments. 5 minutes.
Yeah, you don't have to raise your hand. Just go ahead and fire away with questions as you.
Yeah, Coach Freeze has recently announced that sold out of season tickets for a second consecutive year. You've been doing these ambush events. What have you really learned about the Auburn fan base in these first 2 years based on that stuff?
Incredible. It's one of the best home field environments in college football, and the faithfulness of the Auburn people to sell out our students. Don't want to forget them, because together they form the 80,000 plus that will be there every Saturday. And it does come with, I think Bruce and I would both say, it makes you want to deliver because of their faithfulness to support our program so well. But it just speaks to the Auburn family and how faithful and loyal they are. And we're grateful that of the job that Red Hobart and his staff do in pushing the ticket sales. It's a total team effort, but really thankful and pleased of the support we receive from the Auburn fans.
Coach Pearl, you brought in some key guys in the portal this year, along with some two good guys in the recruiting class. Is there a correlation between what potentially could be a really tough non-conference schedule and how much of a veteran team? You've got a lot of seniors. Is there a relationship there, a correlation?
Yeah, we've always tried to play the toughest schedule we could play. Take last year, we scheduled Notre Dame, Indiana, USC, kind of thinking all three of those programs were returning NCAA tournament teams or national, powerhouses and sports across the board.
You've gone a little overboard this year, though.
I've gone overboard this year. No,
you yeah. must feel really
you
good.
You got carried away.
I like that.
You got carried away.
You're older.
I am old. I'm not buying those green bananas anymore. I just, I think the biggest thing is now you've got the program right now to the point where they want to match up against Duke. Yeah, match us up against Duke. Or we get a chance to go to the Maui Invitational with teams like UConn and Michigan State and North Carolina, and that's the group that we're in. And then we've just made some decisions to try, and it's easier to get a program there than it is to keep a program there. And I think the best way for us to keep it there is to act like we belong there. And the only way you can act like you belong there is to play the best.
Coach, going back to the Duke matchup, growing up, going to a Duke basketball game is like a bucket list kind of thing. Can you talk about what it means to be able to have a game like that on your schedule and have a chance to go prove yourself on a national stage?
It's a bit of a bucket list for me. Yeah. I mean, just a coach in that environment, against a great program, great coaching staff, and they're picked number one in the country by almost every poll. And so they've got three or four guys that have got a chance to be first rounders. And so, you know, our guys will be excited about the opportunity. We're going to have to really play well and play physically and play smart and, you know, make some shots. But it is definitely a bucket list. I've never coached there.
They got a guy scrimmaging with Team USA Basketball, tearing it up.
Yeah, Cooper Flagg will be. He'll probably be the number one player taken in the NBA draft next year.
Coach Freeze, there is a lot of talk this week about how tough Jordan-Hare Stadium is to play in for opposing teams. Kirby Smart had some words about just how tough it is to be at Auburn. But big games on the schedule at home this year, Oklahoma coming into the SEC, A&M late in the season. What is it about Jordan-Hare and the fans that are there that you can take advantage of and try to win some of those games?
Yeah, we experienced some of that in some of the bigger games last year. You know, it's well documented. I've said our consistency wasn't what it should be. But in some of those bigger games against the better teams, I thought our fans and the energy in that stadium gave us a real chance if we could just get that thing to the fourth quarter. And unfortunately, we didn't make enough plays against the top level competition last year to get us to the win column, which is disappointing. But that place is just special. You don't walk into many stadiums 2 hours before game time and the entire student section is already packed. Bruce experiences that in Neville. He's done a great job of, and along with the students, of creating just a very, very home-friendly atmosphere that's difficult to play in. And Jordan-Hare is the same way. And appreciate the kind words that some of the coaches have said. But the compliments really go to our fans and our students.
He was going to ask you about the Maryland transfer you guys got, Fanaji. What would you
say his name better than I do. I think you were dead on with it. Yeah, we're excited to get him. We needed some depth there, and he's played a lot of snaps at a Power 5 school. Obviously, Coach Durkin knew of him and knew his family, and I just think we needed some extra depth there with experience. I really like our young linebackers. I do. But you're never quite sure exactly how those young ones are going to really perform the first time you roll out there in this league. And felt like, man, if we could get, you know, another guy, DB, and which we did from Colorado, and then another linebacker, that we'd feel a little bit better about our maturity in those rooms.
What's your expectation for somebody that comes in at this point? How quickly can they learn things? Yeah. What do you expect from them?
Well, the good things are both have done this. They've gone through installs and they've run similar defenses because all of us run the same things, just call it different stuff. But and so you would hope that their learning curve, I met with DJ yesterday to go through the whole defensive roster, and he felt like that they were picking things up quickly, even though they've been here a very short time. We'll see in fall camp more of that and see how they do. But certainly they're not, you know, our other kids, man, spring practice and then going through an install every week in the few hours that we have to be with them are certainly ahead. But he felt really good about their football IQ and how they're picking up things.
Coach Freeze, how do you feel about your team's physical conditioning headed into fall camp? Do you feel, is your team healthy? Any notable injuries that we know about?
Obviously, I can't remember what's been reported and what hadn't, but Tyler Scott, we lost, unfortunately, to an ACL tear, and that we were already a little thin in the secondary, so we hate for that. And then Alex McPherson is dealing with, he's been diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome. We think there's more to it, but the doctors really hadn't been able to put an exact finger on it. He hadn't been medically released to do anything with this yet either. Other than those two, we're pretty healthy.
You feel good about Townsville though being able to step in this place?
Well, if the spring game's any indication, we have great confidence in him, even though he's a freshman. I mean, I thought he stepped in that game and just was rock solid, and obviously has proven he's got the leg strength and all of that. And I'd love to have them both, and hopefully we will. You know, we're hoping that Alex is actually going to see a specialist tomorrow, and hopefully we can get that headed in the right direction.
Coach, Peyton Thorne's been a big topic at media days this week. What do you need to see from him before the season starts to get to where he needs to be?
I've been pleased with everything I've seen with him from January until now. I think what we need to see from him is a lot of people around him making plays when the opportunity arises, and him making the correct decisions and throwing accurate balls. and deciphering whether it's a run or a throw and what we're trying to do. And I'm really a Peyton Thorne fan as a leader and as a young man. And I'm excited and cautiously optimistic that you're going to see a good product from him.
Perry Thompson, now on campus, didn't go through spring, but obviously incredibly talented. Yeah. Does it change how you coach a true freshman that doesn't go through spring when you probably want to use him this fall?
Yeah, he's got to spend a lot more time on his own studying the installs. He's, you know, a little behind. But, again, this is not something that's really new to football. I mean, it used to be that's when you got them all and you still got them ready. And so you're just never sure how freshmen are going to respond, really. And Perry is talented. He's going to be a heck of a football player. I hope he does it in year one. But it's a little early to tell, and I certainly don't want to cast unreal expectations on a freshman who's going to roll out and play against, you know, arguably some of the best athletes in the country that play corner. I mean, those are some really good athletes, and some of them are old and mature. But I'm excited about those young receivers for sure.
Coach Burrow, you've been championing the everything school mantra for a while now. Would you be willing to say that between Auburn basketball and football, you have the best combined home environments for either program in the entire country?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say. They're very special places with great history and tradition in football and more recent history and tradition, because Neville's a younger building. It speaks to our fans, it speaks to our students, and, you know, just – Coach and I really believe that we absolutely cannot do this without Auburn family. We can't. I could not do it. Coach can't get this thing going unless our fans are supporting us, loving on our kids, patient, supporting NIL, all the things, traveling when we travel. And that's what's allowed us to, you know, develop a really competitive basketball program. Has been great support. And our players feel it.
Coach Freeze, bringing Fault to SEC Media Days. It's rare to bring a sophomore.
Yeah.
You must see some intangibles off the field of leadership besides his physical tools. Talk about that and why he was worthy of being an ambassador for Auburn this week.
Yeah, those are always difficult for me. I wish they would let you bring five people and you go two offense, two defense, and a specialist. That would be a lot easier for coaches, I think. It's hard when you're doing three. There was a lot of deserving people, I felt like, from Connor Lou to Jason Jones to obviously Keldrick too, and Keontae Scott, and I mean, there's a lot of good choices. But when you evaluate people that when you see a team react to the way a certain person leads and talks, and he has captured that defensive line and has really become the voice of J-Mac, don't want to leave him out. There's a lot that could have come. But in our eyes, Keldrick had just earned it by the way he goes about it, whether it's academics, whether it's his nutrition, whether it's his work ethic, whether it's his vocal leadership and him speaking up to say, no, this is the standard and we got to demand more of that. He has been as consistent as anyone, and not more. And we felt like he had earned it.
Coach, one of the themes of the week with Media Days has been Cam Coleman. People are excited. They're talking about starting dynasty modes on the game with Cam Coleman. Talk about the passing game headed into fall camp and what you hope to accomplish. What benchmarks do you hope to hit based on where you finished last year in the passing game with 1,700 yards from the starting quarterback?
Yeah, to me, that's not good football, 1,700 yards. And I don't – you know, last year's over. We're a different team. Cam is going to be special. Again, you know, I've coached a lot of really good receivers. And, you know, we signed A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, Van Jefferson, all in the same class. They're all still in the NFL doing really well. But I'll tell you, year one, all three of them were not exactly ready to go and do it. I mean, we redshirted Van, you know, and D.K. didn't play an enormous amount of snaps. A.J. was a little more ready now. But that's what we got into coaching for, is to develop these great athletes like Cam. Now, Cam's going to play in year one. He's earned it. He came out in spring practice. He's one of the better players on the team. I just want everybody to give him a little patience, too, as he grows up and learns the game and has to go play in the SEC environments. But I'm glad he has hype around him. That means we're recruiting the right kind of kids.
All right, Coach Burrow, Coach
Bruce. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
coaches. Thank you, Kirk. Appreciate it.
So actually, yes, that was Hugh Freeze and Bruce Pearl with the media, with some of the media that was covering was out in Dallas for SEC Media Days.
We might get to talk to Andy next week. He was there for the ambush event as well.
Right.
We'll get his adventures in Texas at the Houston and Dallas ambush events last week before Auburn.
And you were sort of putting it together that yes, this was going on probably while you were on the air with us on Wednesday.
This event would have happened Wednesday night. I probably, this is while we were on the air, and then I saw a couple of the Auburn folks at the Globe Life event that was held that night for us, and putting some things together about when Auburn was in town. Got to see Hugh in the hotel lobby a little bit.
He mentioned
that he was and by the way, I don't know if I've heard anyone else talk about this, but Hugh Freeze shouted him out in the small room. So we weren't the only convention going on at the Omni.
There also appeared to be
some sort of national meeting of local chamber of commerces.
Okay.
And at that event, according to Hugh Freeze, apparently Opelika won something. The Opelika Chamber was recognized by the national branch of chamber of commerces. You're nodding your head.
I saw something about that.
So Coach Freeze bumped into the Opelika Chamber of Commerce in the lobby of the hotel on Wednesday night, and they were, you know, just I think the Opelika folks were celebrating their victory.
Yeah.
And you know, there were receptions and things were going on into the night, and Coach Freeze got to bump into them and take some pictures, congratulate them.
That's right.
He mentioned it in the small room that he wanted it known that the Opelika people were out there celebrating as well. So and then he got to see old faces from the beat and old faces from the conference. I mean, Hugh Freeze has been around at some of these SEC Media Days events dating back to his time at Ole Miss. And so it seems like he really enjoyed himself Wednesday, getting to see some old faces and getting some surprise encounters with folks back home.
Oh, that's cool. All right, we will get to our final.
And congratulations to the Opelika folks on that, too. Very cool thing.
A win's a win.
Yeah, no kidding. We'll get to our final break. Back to wrap things up for the week here on the Friday Drive.
Since 1997, River City Door has helped take the guesswork out of the garage.